Hi everybody, nice to be here again. And so again, as was just mentioned, this is a talk about the awakeness that is always already here. And in the first two talks, I talked about the qualities of our true nature that are always here, that are so fundamental to who and what we are, that they just are always present in every experience. And awakeness or awareness itself is one of them. Just this innate capacity to be aware, to be awake, to notice and recognize experience, recognize what's present. Other fundamental qualities, equally fundamental, are space, aliveness, discrimination, and oneness. So these five qualities are kind of what I've been talking about. I covered awareness and space in the first couple talks, and a little bit about aliveness. And I just want to stress again that these are different aspects of this one mystery that we are. They're different qualities, but they're simultaneous qualities. It's not like you're aware in one moment and then space in another moment, or spacious in another moment. They're all always present simultaneously, just like water is simultaneously wet and liquid and transparent. Those qualities are always present in our being. And if there's nothing else that you kind of get from all these talks that I'm giving, if there's just one point that kind of stays with you, gets you kind of curious and looking at your experience maybe a little bit differently, is the idea that you do not really need to have a big or expanded or awakened experience of your true nature in order to explore, experience, discriminate, distinguish your true nature. Using the example of water again, a single drop of water has all of those qualities. Now, clearly, a bigger body of water, a bigger container of water, has those qualities. It's very obvious. But even a single drop has wetness. Even a single drop is liquid. And so, with our own experience of our true nature, there's nothing wrong with a big experience or an awakening. And yet, this is like an invitation to explore and notice and experience these very fundamental qualities of what you are that are here right now in the awareness that's hearing these words. You can just check, is there any awareness now? Is there any space here? Is there any sense of aliveness? And then tonight, I'm gonna launch into another one of these fundamental qualities. And it's kind of a subtle one, or maybe just like actually awareness and space, it is a quality of our experience, a quality of our being that's so constantly present that we either kind of overlook it or just take it for granted. It's just so ever present that we don't really notice it. We don't consider it. Just like the air in the room that you start to take for granted, and you can go days without really thinking too much about air, considering it that much, because it's pretty much ever present. And that quality that's so ever present, the best word for it is discrimination. It's this inherent capacity built into awareness, built into you, that is able to distinguish differences. And in every experience that you ever have, every experience where you are aware of something, there is this inherent capacity operating that discriminates the differences in that experience. And that can be very simple. It can be the ability to discriminate red versus blue, or hot versus cold, or hard versus soft. I mean, you could go on and on. And every experience has something in it that you're discriminating that makes it different from every other experience. Even if that you're having a new experience that you don't have a name for, that you don't have, that isn't in any way stored in your memory. This discrimination is there and instantly knows that this is a new experience that you've never had before. A simple example is a bird watcher who is out, checking out the birds, and he or she sees a bird that they've never seen before, that is so strikingly different that even though they don't have a name for it, even though they don't have a memory of it, they immediately know that's a bird I've never seen before. So this inherent discrimination just functions simultaneously, identically with awareness itself. And again, it's maybe seems so obvious, it seems so ordinary. You're doing it all the time. If I ask you what color the ceiling is in your room, you can tell me. There's no added effort to also discriminate. So tonight, I want to talk about a more subtle expression of this inherent discriminating quality of awareness, a more subtle way in which it functions. And that is that inherent in awareness is the capacity to distinguish or discriminate the truth. It's not something extra, it's just built right into awareness that it registers the truth. Now here's the challenge, is that all there is truth. All there is what is. All there is reality. All there is this that's here. What's here is true. What's here is real. And so there's just a lot of truth everywhere you go. There's a lot of reality. And so, how do you discriminate the truth? Well, the difference is always in how much truth. How much truth is being experienced? How much truth is being pointed to? How much truth are you noticing, experiencing in that moment? And that can vary from a lot to very, very little. The experience of awakening is an experience of a very, very big truth, an expansion of truth. And a lot of ordinary experiences are much smaller truths, but they're all true. I always use the example that a full bladder is a very, very small truth, but it sure still is damn true. You can't deny the reality of a full bladder, at least not for very long. So even though it's small, it's true, it's real, it exists. So how do we actually discriminate how much truth there is? Very simply, a bigger truth, a big truth, opens your heart and quiets your mind. It opens or softens or relaxes your sense of self, which I call the heart, which just because that area in our bodies is the most sensitive to your sense of being and to this expansion or softening or opening that happens when you encounter a very big truth. And again, at the same time, your mind gets relatively quiet. It's always a matter of degree, but if you're moving into more truth, your mind gets quieter. Very simply, you have less to think about. Even knowing where your car keys are gives your mind that little piece of truth, gives your mind one less thing to think about. Your mind doesn't have to compensate and try to fill in the blanks. It already knows. You already know. So the truth opens your heart and quiets your mind, opens your sense of self, your sense of me, your sense of I. And the opposite is also true. So when there's a movement into a smaller truth, when something is contracting your experience of the truth, then you start to feel a sense of contraction. You start to feel small. And your mind gets very busy. Anytime your mind is really racing, running fast, you can pretty much assume that there's something, some small truth that's like stuck in your craw and making you have to think hard to try to fill in the blanks, try to make up for how small that truth feels. It just doesn't feel very complete, and so you think a lot to try to fill in the blanks. A good metaphor for how this feels viscerally is the experience which some of you may have had, but most of you could imagine, that when you encounter a big truth, it's similar to the feeling you would have if you had a roommate sharing, say, a two-bedroom apartment, and your roommate leaves for a month. And just take that in for a moment. Imagine what it'd be like when your roommate walks out the door and you turn around and there's this sense of, ah, I got the whole place to myself for a month. I can just be me. I can just, if I like it clean, I don't have to clean up after anybody else. If I don't really care if it's clean, I don't even have to clean up after myself for a month. I just have all this room to just be myself. And then in contrast, a small truth, a movement into a limited belief or idea or experience, is like that same roommate coming back with their parents. And the roommate and their parents are coming and going to your their parents are going to stay for a month in this little two-room apartment that you share. And it's like all of a sudden, instead of that sense of openness and space and relaxation, there's the exact opposite feeling inside of kind of like, suddenly your two-bedroom apartment feels really small, feels really contracted. And so similarly with a small truth, suddenly your being, the room you have to be in gets really small. Now, in contrast, the mind does not is actually kind of useless for discriminating truth, or at least discriminating how much truth any particular perspective or belief or experience contains. The mind, again, all content of all experiences, all thoughts, all beliefs, they all have some truth, because all there is truth. So even the smallest, most limited perspective has a little bit of truth in it. And by the way, some truths are, to be fair, some truths are ridiculously small and only exist as a thought or a belief. So they can, a truth can only exist in your mind, and yet it will seem true to your mind, because the mind is looking at the content of your thoughts, the content of your experiences, and it's undeniable that you're thinking that thought. And even more confusing to most people is that to the mind, all of our every truth looks big. Every thought that passes through your mind seems like a really big deal. And it's even exaggerated by this contraction, because it's also a contraction of your awareness. And so when you contract your awareness onto a specific thought, it works like a microscope. That contraction of awareness puts all of your attention onto that one thought, which magnifies it. It suddenly fills your awareness, because you're contracted onto it, so that's all you're aware of. So all of our fears and doubts and worries and desires and dreams and wishes, they all look really big when we're thinking about them, when we're focused on them. So measuring the truth with your mind, I always say it's like measuring the truth with your mind is like going outside with a ruler to see what the temperature is. No matter which way you hold that damn ruler, it's gonna, I mean, no matter what the temperature is outside, that ruler is still gonna say 12. It's just gonna say 12. It's not the right thing to use to measure temperature. And it is the heart, or again, more subtly, our fundamental sense of self, or your sense of who you are, what you are, that actually responds when a truth is smaller or bigger. It kind of makes sense if you consider that in order to experience, in order to have an experience, your awareness has to actually like inhabit it. It has to move into it. And so if it happens to be a small truth, your awareness gets really small in order to experience it, in order to do that thing of focusing on it. And if you instead open up to a bigger experience, your awareness stretches out, it expands, it just naturally opens in the absence of anything contracting it. So imagine it's almost like as if you became the size of whatever clothing you were wearing. Imagine if you put on a doll's clothing, a doll's sweater, say, and that somehow made you the size of a doll. And then in contrast, if you put on the uniform of an NFL linebacker, you would suddenly be 280 pounds and 6'4". It's like that would be a very strange kind of reality where you became the size of whatever you were experiencing. And on this subtle level of discriminating how big the truth is, that's how we know. That's how we are directly experientially aware of how true things are, by becoming smaller or bigger, at least experientially. It's not actually our being or our capacity for awareness that is limited in the moment. It's just our experience of it. Kind of like if you put your hands around your eyes like a set of blinders, then the room doesn't become smaller, but your experience of the room becomes smaller. So a small truth contracts our sense of self as we move into it. A big truth expands it. Just simply gives awareness more room to move. And this is the challenge for most, or not most, but a lot of spiritual seekers, is that in some way they want to be in, they want to get to and stay in expanded awareness. And that is, there's nothing wrong with expanded awareness, but again, the main point I'm making here in all these talks is rather to learn to be curious about, and in this case, to even trust your inherent capacity to directly, viscerally discriminate how true every experience actually is. You can trust it when your heart contracts. And of course, you can trust it when your heart opens. It's actually the right way for your heart to feel. It's the right way for your sense to feel, your sense of self to feel when you get very contracted. It's telling you how big, how true, how real, how important your experience or perspective is in that moment. And by the way, you're already good at this. This is not a prescription, not something that you have to now go and practice to get good at. Your heart has always, always, always been telling you how true things are. I'll ask you, have you ever felt contracted? If the answer is yes, then you can know that your heart is working perfectly and has always been working perfectly. And if you've ever felt a sense of expansion, a sense of softening, a sense of relaxation deep within your being, that where it's you, your true self that's kind of softening and relaxing, then your heart was working perfectly. So it's not something you have to actually start doing or getting better at. It's just an invitation to listen more, to notice these expansions and contractions. In essence, it's an invitation to listen to your heart, listen to your deepest wisdom, your deepest knowing. So right now, just let's play with this a little bit. And so I invite you to actually just take a moment and notice what is happening right now. Is there any sense of an opening or softening, or is there any sense of a tightening, contraction, a holding in, a resistance possibly? And no matter how slight that is, because this is one of those fundamental qualities is aliveness. So actually your awareness, your being is at least experientially always expanding or contracting. It doesn't actually ever get stuck anywhere. Even in the most contracted states, there's always a little bit of wobble, wiggle room, a little bit of movement, a little softening, then a little tightening, a little softening, maybe a big softening, then a big tightening. It's always moving one way or the other. So notice it right now. Just notice, even it possibly in response to my words or in response to something else in your awareness, some tangent that your thought has gone off on, or some fuller sense possibly of presence or being that's just happens to be arising in this moment. And notice this response of your being. And now I invite you to stay with that as much as you can. It's very subtle, especially when it's not happening in a big way. When there's a big expansion, nobody has to tell you that you just had a big expansion. And when there's a big contraction, nobody has to tell you that. But sometimes it's a subtle movement. And so stay with that sense as subtly as you can. And then try on this thought. Again, almost like you were trying on a sweater. Just try it on, put it on, see how it fits. And the thought is, I will never be happy until I have $10 million. And if you can catch it, especially right at the initial trying on of the thought, I will never be happy until I have $10 million. And just see if you can sense whether there was an expansion or a contraction. It's a little tricky because everything is always relative. So if you were totally wrapped up in some other way more contracted fear or doubt or worry, and then you start thinking about having $10 million, you might feel a little bit of expansion. But for most people, that thought is kind of limiting. I will never be happy until I have $10 million. It will create a subtle sense of contraction, or maybe even a strong contraction if you actually, in some part of you actually really believes it. And of course, again, it's not that the thought has no truth to it. You can be happy if you get a $10 million or if you already have it. And it may even happen that way, that you just are never happy until someday you wake up and have $10 million, and then, oh my God, you're happy. So especially if you had a really strong belief, you might at least for a while feel pretty happy if you got a lot of money. But in a more general sense, in a more complete sense, it's a very limiting thought. And so most people would probably have a sense of that being contractive. And then, you can compare it, just contrast it with the thought, I can be happy no matter how much money I have. Again, it's a relative thought. It's still in a sense of belief, an idea, but it's a little bit more spacious. In fact, probably a lot more spacious, especially if you don't have $10 million already. Then that thought just gives you a lot more room to be happy, to be yourself. It's like, again, the roommate going away for a month. I can be happy no matter what happens with my finances, with money. It has nothing really to do with it. And so you can contrast those two thoughts. Neither one is really, some sort of cosmic, expanded, deep spiritual. The one about I can be happy no matter what has a certain resonance with the depth of your being. And so I hope you got a little taste of that contrast. Now, I'm gonna offer you another thought to explore that I picked just because of the, what this group is about, awakening and awakening together. But I want you to see if you can really subtly sense what happens in your actual being when you hold the thought, I will never be happy or at peace until I have fully awakened. I will never be happy or at peace until I have fully awakened. Now, this might be kind of challenging, most likely with this group, a little bit more challenging than the thought about $10 million, because there could be, I don't know you folks that well, but there could be a little bit more belief connected to that thought, a little bit of a sense in which it engages something, it engages your belief systems. But if you can, again, innocently, like a child, just looking at it to see, just out of pure curiosity, does that thought actually expand you, or does it contract you? Again, there's no wrong answer. Relative to some other thoughts, it might be a little bit more spacious. But my guess is that most of the time, it's actually a limiting thought. It's kind of surprising. It's like the idea that you can't be happy until you've awakened is not actually very true. It's not wrong. It's just a very small, limited truth, a limited way of looking at things. Small, this is not a case where bigger is necessarily better. Bigger is just better. So small truths are fine, big truths are fine. And I don't know if you caught this as we experimented with like those were just sample, kind of things I just pulled out of the air to give you something to try it on. But you may have found that the response of this awareness is very immediate, very quick. And if another thought or another awareness moves, your awareness moves on to something else. It could be a thought, it could be a feeling, it could be, like the first statement, I will never be happy until I have $10 million, might have actually made some of you laugh. Because it sounds like a joke, it's a pretty funny thought. And so that the response of your being, the response of awareness is very quick. And if that sense of humor about it comes, then the heart will start responding to that. So there might be, and a lot of jokes, by the way, a lot of the punchlines of jokes are like that. It's like you're going along, someone's telling you this story, and then they say something that's so like ridiculously impossible or not true, that for a moment there's that second before you get the joke, before you realize that that someone was telling a joke, and your awareness contracts, trying to like, huh, what? I don't get it. And then, oh, it's a joke. And there's this wonderful softening, opening, expansion, because the perspective, it's a joke, is a much bigger perspective than trying to figure out this silly statement. Now, one of the challenges is that in life, it's not really always up to you how big a truth you experience. Especially the biggest truths. The biggest truths are really a function of grace. We just are blessed in a moment where the mind falls silent and awareness touches something much, much bigger, a sense of presence, a sense of being, a sense of love, a sense of peace. In contrast, smaller truths are a dime a dozen. We share them all the time with each other. We sit around and, we share our small truths. And so, and even then, it's not up to you, because what someone else says, or what you see on the news, or what you pick up a magazine, what you read, it's most likely not that profound a truth, though it could be, especially if it again hits you at a moment and is a part of the way grace is reaching out and touching you. So you can't really control how expanded or contracted you are in each moment, but you can learn to trust this inherent ability to really clearly discriminate the small truths from the big ones. It's infallible. In a sense, what actually protects you, just like the punchline of the joke, what actually protects you from small truths is not to get rid of them or avoid them or steer your life so that you never ever have a small thought or fear or doubt or worry. The thing that actually frees you from them is to recognize that they're small, to see that, oh yeah, oh that, oh there's that feeling, oh yeah, that always contracts me, but hey, it's really no big deal. And I know that because I feel contracted. And then the other thing in tracking this and paying attention and learning to trust your ability to distinguish the small ones and the big ones, that way you are present when a big truth does come along, when grace touches you, when it could be a beautiful experience in nature, a sweet video on Facebook of someone doing some very compassionate act, or even bigger truths, where in a moment of clear seeing, there's a recognition of your identity, your being beyond all your usual ideas of self. And so by noticing the contractions and the expansions, you can just naturally be there when the expansion happens, when the big truth just hits you over the head like a ton of bricks. Which, by the way, the truth often also has that quality to it of being very substantial. It has a very strong impact on your being, especially these bigger truths. And so we have sayings like, the truth hit me like a ton of bricks. I think in the description of this course, I even quoted my teacher, Neelam, who she once very sweetly said that you never know when grace is going to come for a visit. And then she paused and she said, but it's a really good idea to be home when she does. And so this tracking, this paying attention to your expansion and contraction means that you're home. It means you're there when grace rings the doorbell, shows up on your front door. So that's the real gift of this. You already have the ability to discriminate because that's inherent in awareness itself. But by tracking this subtle aspect of it means you're home when grace visits. But I hope even more than that, I hope this kind of subtle pointing to this aspect of discrimination, of our capacity to distinguish small truths and big truths, I hope it gives a new angle or meaning to, again, the overall theme of these talks, that the size of your experience is not as important as these fundamental qualities that are always already present in every experience. If you pay attention to those, then the size of the truth will become obvious, and you don't have to do anything more. You can just notice, oh yeah, there's a limiting thought, or there's a fearful thought, or there's somebody saying something and it's contracting me. Oh well, it just must not be that important or that true in this moment. And when someone shares something, or you're touched by something, or you're moved by something, and it opens your heart, you can still notice these fundamental qualities, this fundamental quality of discrimination, and trust it. It lets you know when a big truth is true, is really true. And you can use this, you know, that's the real value of this kind of pointer, but it's also I think helpful to point out that you can use this to tune into your kind of inner wisdom on a daily basis. You can learn to listen to your heart and notice, you know, when there's a decision or a choice or something just practical, relative, you know, should I have the soup? Should I have the salad? You can tune in and sense what's truer today, what's truer in fact right now. And especially with a, you know, a decision like what to have for lunch, the decision might be very slight, or even occasionally they might actually kind of be the same size. You know, you check and there's no real difference between soup and salad. And so they're the same size. And you can also track this inner knowing, this inner wisdom, with bigger decisions or concerns, like whether to stay in a relationship or a job. However, when it comes to a bigger decision, just relatively bigger decision, it's a good idea to give lots of time to the process. You don't want to make a big life choice just based on a single moment's experience of how true your relationship or job feels in this moment. It's more a question of what's the overall climate of truth regarding that job or that relationship. So the more, you know, when it comes to a bigger decision relatively, it's nice to give it more time to get a truer reading of the overall, you know, average of how true it feels. And again, that being said, still is the more important thing is to be home when the truth arises. You can really trust your wisdom when it comes to the big insights or realizations or awakenings. Now, here's a funny aspect of this. If you really get this, that how big you feel, how big your awareness is, how expanded your sense of self is. And by the way, when the sense of self gets really big, it doesn't really make sense to call it me anymore. But it still is the sense of self. It's just the sense of self with a capital S, or the sense of your deeper, truer nature. It becomes very obvious in those moments. But if you get it, that how big or small that feels actually has nothing to do with how big you really are, then this perspective on the truth can like turn your world inside out. How big or small you feel in this moment or any moment has actually nothing to do with how big or small you really are. How big or small you feel is showing you how big or small the container of your experience is in that moment. You are still, in reality, you are still awareness that has an infinite capacity to contract and expand as appropriate to each experience. But when it contracts, that's not telling you that you're small or that you're inadequate or that you're unworthy or that you're lacking in any way. It's showing you that some belief or fear or doubt or desire or wish or belief is really small. Again, it's like that sweater that you put on, you know, the doll sweater that you put on, and you get really small. It's not really telling you about you, it's telling you how big the doll sweater is. And so our contracted experience are actually that way. They're not about, it's you that feels contracted, but it's not actually you that's small. So again, if you get this, it turns the world inside out. You can, instead of resisting or trying to fix or change how big or small you feel, you can just trust it because it's not about you. So, you know, trusting this experience, you know, the real freedom that can come from trusting this way is not that it puts you into some permanent state of extreme expansion. Every awakening, every profound realization that anyone's ever had has, you know, involved this sense of expansion, this sense of dissolving, this sense of opening, and it doesn't last. that this awareness that you are is alive. And one thing you can be sure of when you get really, really expanded is that the next thing is probably going to be relatively some kind of contraction. It'll be some kind of return to some more limited identity or concern, or that full bladder I mentioned is going to kick in, and you're going to suddenly have a much smaller experience of truth and of yourself. But the freedom that can come from these experiences of awakening is that with enough experiences of moving in and out of all the different sizes of truth, you eventually start to realize that it doesn't really matter if in this moment you're contracted. And I don't know if you can sense that how this is actually a bigger freedom, right? A lot of people have this idea of freedom, that freedom is when you just hang out in this totally expanded, almost non-existent state of total open awareness. And that's a beautiful experience. I highly recommend it. But it's not really freedom if you either have to always be there, or if you even in a sense get stuck there, which happens. People get stuck in emptiness. They get stuck in very expanded states. The bigger freedom is when it doesn't matter anymore. And so the experiences of expansion are really meant to bring you to that bigger freedom, to that place where you just trust and acknowledge and recognize that it's all working perfectly, and that it's perfectly normal and natural and fine if you contract, that your being is not harmed or diminished in any way by a temporary contraction, just like your muscles are not harmed if for a moment you contract them, because they still retain the ability to relax. They still retain the ability to expand again. And your awareness always still has that ability. So this is taking it even to another, beyond turning your world inside out and changing your whole angle or meaning of what contraction means. The possibility exists to go beyond actually having to be concerned about it. You can still track it, you can still be guided by it, but to just understand that if a contraction comes along, there's no harm done. Nothing has been damaged. So again, let's just test it out. Test it out with your own ability to discriminate. First try on the perspective, that sometimes a little, catches on a little bit in the spiritual seeking kind of stage. It's better to be expanded. I want to be more expanded, and that's what I need to be more expanded, and or the flip side, which is, oh no, I'm feeling all contracted. I was feeling so expanded a few minutes ago, and now I'm all contracted. Does that whole way of being with this inherent expansion and contraction that's happening, does that expand you? Does wanting to be expanded expand you? Or paradoxically, this is a crazy thing, does wanting to be expanded actually contract you? That would be like, oh, it's like wanting to be expanded contracts you. And then again, as a contrast, just try it on like you would try on a sweater in the store, a perspective that says, my heart is always as contracted or as expanded as it needs to be right now. I can trust it just as it is. It doesn't harm or damage my awareness in any way to either expand or contract. It's always just as it needs to be. And notice, again, notice viscerally, notice right here, right now, which one of those, I mean, I exaggerated them a little bit, but that helps sometimes create the contrast. Just notice which one is not only feels more open and spacious, but take it in for a moment that means it's just simply truer. Is it possible that it's actually truer, that your heart is always as contracted or as expanded as it needs to be right now, and you can trust it? It's always just as it needs to be. What if that's actually true? And again, the proof is really in the visceral response of your being to that perspective. You don't need, you know, someone else to tell you how true things are. They can point you to truth, they can share their bigger truths, or again, they'll always be willing to share their smaller truths. But it's you, really. It's your awareness itself. It's what you are that discriminates these big and small truths as they arise spontaneously in life. So if it's really true that what you are has always had and has right now the capacity to discriminate, and it does so in part by expanding and contracting in response to the size of the truth, then really you can just relax. You can just relax and be as you are in every moment and in every experience of small truth, medium-sized truth, and of course even the biggest truths. Those are, of course, as big as they are. And no matter how contracted or expanded, no matter how your experience is opening or closing in this moment or in every moment, you still simply are this capacity for awareness and discrimination. If it gets small, that's okay. That's just that, in a sense, that's just the way it functions. It's part of the way awareness, true nature, discrimination functions in the world by expanding and contracting. And it's not a sign of something wrong or something harmed or damaged or limited. It is a limited experience of this limitless capacity for awareness that you are, but that's okay. It hasn't actually left any lasting kink or dent in your awareness, because it's very likely, just like I said, after a really profound and earth-shattering opening, the only, you know, the next possibility is most likely going to be some kind of contraction, some relative contraction at least, even if it's not a full re-identification with some, you know, painful or difficult part of your being. It's still probably going to contract a little bit at some point. And so similarly, when you get really, really contracted, it's kind of good news that most likely the next movement of your being is going to be a softening, an opening. It's just that there's just a natural exhaustion, or, you know, it requires a lot of effort to stay contracted. Contraction is the part that we do. Expansion is kind of more like the force of gravity, and just happens when we're not thinking so hard, not trying so hard to figure things out or control things or that kind of thing. And so even if you get really caught up in something like that and get very contracted, at some point you just, whew, you can't do it anymore. It's like if you tried holding your arm up in the air, raising your hand for you know, minutes, and then maybe like half an hour or an hour, you know, after a certain amount of time, you just can't hold it up anymore. The exhaustion sets in and something releases. One of my teachers once said that most awakenings actually happen in a moment where we just get exhausted. And so something, not out of volition, but out of exhaustion, something lets go. And that beautiful expansion that we call awakening just happens naturally, spontaneously. course, now, it is a tendency to maybe want to go like try, okay, I'm going to wear myself out even faster. I'm going to think, I'm going to contract my contract the hell out of my awareness so that it will finally relax and I can have an awakening. But it's funny. It's hard to trick yourself. It just is happening, and you can track it, you can trust it, and you can be home when grace comes for a visit. So that's what I had to kind of share initially, at least this evening. So I'll watch where people type, or if somebody wants to raise their hand, I would be glad to answer a question, or if somebody just wants to share, maybe share your experience when we did those little experiments. Was there a clear distinction between expansion and contraction with the different perspectives and ideas? And notice even now. Notice even now when I open it up for questions. Like, what happens? Is there an expansion? Is there a contraction? Or just a neutrality? A simple peace? It's happening. It's alive. It's always here. Being actually is not a noun, it's a verb. It's not really a thing in that sense. It's more, it is an aliveness, an awake aliveness. Oh, Larry just got a kiss. Sweet. That softened and opened my heart a little bit, seeing the kiss. Any questions? It's always a challenge when you talk about these subtle aspects of being, because often it kind of evokes them. It kind of puts people much more in touch with their being. And as I said earlier, the truth opens your heart and quiets your mind. So I'm hoping, anyways, that some of you are having a little quieter moment. No longer does it have to be like the mind always telling you these bad jokes that contract you because you don't immediately recognize that it's a joke. Zach says he's more aware of his expansions. That's the key. And as I said, don't, I invite you to not leave out the contractions. Like, wow, it's so incredibly accurate when your heart contracts. I don't know if, some of you, I'm sure, played that game when you were a kid where somebody said you're getting warmer or you're getting colder. And it just doesn't work if the person you're playing with always says, oh, you're getting warmer, you're getting warmer, you're getting warmer. No matter what you say, no matter what you guess, they say, hey, you're getting warmer, you're getting warmer, you're getting warmer. After a little while, you would get frustrated because how are you supposed to, orient? How are you supposed to function in that game if they're always just, being nice and telling you that you're getting warmer? No, it's like you need them to give you clear, accurate feedback. And so you need them to tell you, oh, you're getting colder. Oh, no, now you're getting warmer. Okay, no, now you're getting colder again. That's how our heart, our wisdom, our inner wisdom guides us. Not just by expanding, but also by appropriately contracting. Just saying, oh yeah, that's a movement into a smaller truth. No harm done, no problem. And it's still true. So if if it's arising in the moment, you still might even do something about it. Like, again, back to the small truth of a full bladder. Oh, you just notice it, you get up, you take care of it, then you're back to being available for possibly a bigger truth. And by the way, I'll just mention this since there's still not noticing anybody raising their hand or having a specific question. I'll just mention that I've mentioned it at least once already in these talks that on my website, which is endless-satsang.com, there's a tab at the top that says free ebooks. And you go on there, and there's the very first free ebook is Living from the Heart. And part two of that book is called The Heart's Wisdom. And it's really just all about what I was talking about here, about this inherent quality of discrimination, or you could call it wisdom, this capacity, because wisdom is not just discriminating whether something's hot or cold or red or blue. Wisdom is discriminating how true things are. And the flip side of that, one definition of suffering is that suffering, being in delusion, is when we inaccurately discriminate how true things are. When we are, reacting to a small truth as if it's big, and/or responding to a big truth as if it's really small, not that important, not that true. So this wisdom is the antidote to suffering, the antidote to being led around by your mind, being led around by judgments and thoughts. Judgments are like judgment. I always say judgment is the muscle we use to contract our awareness. Thinking is the muscle we use to contract our awareness. And that's fine. That's the right way for thoughts and judgments to feel. And it's not a problem if you recognize that your perspective just got smaller, that your thought has just taken you into a small truth. And it's really in between the thoughts, in between the judgments, that the big truths sometimes land. The big truths sometimes catch you when you least expect it. But as I've been saying, the most important message maybe you can get from all of these talks is that it's always worth your while to explore the experience you are having, big or small. So I'm seeing the time here, just a couple minutes. So I don't know who it is that is gonna wind this up and introduce the next person, but I'll take my. How do I do this again? Do I just unclick it? Yeah. Nope, didn't happen.